Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who was among millions by throwing knives in 1995. It's Adam Hodgins.
I don't regret a thing, Mark. I don't regret a thing.
We've shared the throwing knife story on every single episode we've recorded since 2017, 2018.
It's been a constant throwback, right?
You know when you get to a podcast and there's a 30-second ad and people just hit 30-second fast-forward? I wonder if people do that with us when we tell the same stories about how you were in Canada and I was in Florida. We both went to local flea markets. We threw throwing knives into a wall. I almost got my – I was barefoot in the grass throwing a throwing star – throwing knife – not throwing star – throwing knife at a palm tree. And it bounced off the palm tree and landed right between my toes, my big toe and my – I don't know whatever toe that is, pointer, I don't know, next to big toe, right in between there. I mean, it could have gotten ugly. So that was my throwing knife experience.
You and I dovetail into our throwing knife stories the way other podcasts dovetail into a Casper mattress ad. I think we need to find a throwing knife company that will support this.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Don't let our childhood be yours. Go to Razor's Edge Throwing Knives, razorsedge.com. They have the top quality in throwing knife and throwing knife apparel for all your throwing knife needs. No more bent tips. No more bruised toes, just seamless throwing knife effort every time. Razor's Edge Throwing Knives, razorsedge.com. Like, we could do that, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. Let's just make it up. Let's just do fake ads for every show.
We start our own company.
We become millionaires and just retire. We get on. I was going to say Fish Tank. We get on Shark Tank.
Fish Tank. Fish Tank is for ideas that are like $5,000 or under. It's not a Shark Tank. It's just a fish tank.
I called a Celestial the other day during Chronicles of Riddick episode. I called her SeaWorld. I don't know where that came from. I just called it that. But hey, since we do our conventions, Adam, we can add a 1995 action movie section. And in these sections, we have a bungee jump like on Goldeneye. We have, let's see, Waterworld, you can drink your own pee. It's safe. Desperado, it's safe. Throwing knives.
But you know what else you can do with Desperado? You know how on like Survivor, they're like a challenge. You got to climb a rope, go into the sand, and then put a puzzle together.
Yeah.
We'll have you got to run across, grab a guitar case, go to a table of guns, and see who can get the most guns in their guitar case in a minute.
Oh my gosh! And it's got to throw it the farthest.
Well, it's got to close at the end. It can't not close.
Oh my gosh, that'd be amazing. Just weapons everywhere.
Yeah.
And we need a Judge Dredd one where you wear a helmet and you get put on trial. It's really boring, but it throws everyone off.
The Judge Dredd one is with the helmet is more like an endurance thing where you walk in, you get the helmet on, and the last person to take it off.
Oh my gosh. And how about this? Sudden death, you get a kitchen fight with a mascot of the Adam and Mark Con, the MFF Con mascot, and you have to fight him in the kitchen.
Do you think we could find a Samwise Gamgee lookalike?
Yeah, easy.
So he comes and you fight him in the kitchen.
If y'all haven't watched Icebreaker, go watch it, because that kitchen. I've never seen an actor more scared in my life than in that. But, you know, I was looking at. We've talked about this one. This is probably again, but I got to tell you, after listening to the commentary and just revisiting Desperado, and I want you to share your story and I'll share my story, but I think 1995 for me was the ultimate year for me as far as movies go. Because I remember going to Waterworld by myself and watching it. I remember going to the theater and seeing Mortal Kombat playing and going, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. I saw Congo at a new theater that opened up in Newport Richie. Before, we just had those little theaters, but this was the first amazing one. I think it looked like maybe like an Egyptian temple. I don't know. But it was one of those big theaters. But I also remember sneaking into the theaters because I was 13 then. I snuck into theaters to watch Species. I watched Batman Forever. I saw Goldeneye, blew my mind. You know, I watched Heat, Judge Dredd. Yep. I mean, I spent so much time, like Hackers, dude, that VHS of Hackers.
Hackers.
I bought Crimson Tide from Columbia House. Jackie Chan was introduced to me in 95. This was just a year for me that, like, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, I was like, oh my gosh, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, it's going to be cool, it's going to be this. But all these action movies, and I'm just talking about the action movies that came out at this time.
I definitely remember 94, 95, that spread being the beginning of, like you just said, you nailed it in the head, of the era of going to the theater yourself.
Mm-hmm. Because you hit 13.
So like, you hit 13. So I think the first movie I saw in the theater, like without my parents, was Stargate.
Oh my gosh.
Right? Yep. Like, so in 94, there was Stargate, there was like The Shadow, there was The Mask. I think there was like a Leprechaun. Oh.
You know,
a Leprechaun movie.
You're right, because 94 I went to The Mask with two buddies and I laughed so hard people shushed me. But I was laughing. Yeah. I wasn't being loud. I was just loving the movie. And I also snuck into The Crow in 94 and my mom took me to see Pulp Fiction, which is bonkers.
So but again, like The Crow, Judge Dredd was 95, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I remember after Speed came out in 94, going to see Johnny Mnemonic in 95 and being like, well, that was a movie.
Oh, Demon Knight came out in 95, man. Like, that's just, stacked year, dude. And Major Payne, that was on constant rotation. I know I'm just not naming. I went and saw 9 months three times. So I really do. I think 95 is my year. I think just.
So I went and I remember seeing Congo, Cutthroat Island.
Oh, man.
That's right? These were just movies that you didn't look at them through the lens of, like, is this good or bad? It was just a movie. Like, yes, I went and just saw it. It was good. It was good based on the fact it was a movie, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't think I analyzed any of them. But you know what's funny about me? I remember in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, they had the toys. I'm like, I'm going to go get those. When they had the Casper toys at Pizza Hut, I'm like, I'm going to go get those. But then I also watched Demon Knight. And I was like, oh my gosh. You know, like Showgirls came out. I was like, whoa. So it was a weird in-between year for me where I go to watch Indian in the Cupboard. But then, Jumanji was 95 too. So I go to watch those, but then here I am watching Leprechaun 3. And I'm like, hey, Jade and To Die For, I can watch these. So it was just the craziest time. I was a child, Adam. But I had my hands on infinite movies. I could rent whatever I wanted. And so you're an adolescent, but you're watching gnarly stuff.
My son is the same age now that I would have been in 94.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. But I will say this, Mark, as it was in 95, there was a science teacher. You know how, like, in high school, the tech teachers all watch The Net, the business teachers all watch The Paper Chase, and the biology teachers all watch Jurassic Park, right? That's the rundown.
Yeah, and history teachers show Schindler's List, but you got to sign a document saying you can watch it.
Right. Exactly. So in my high school, when I was in grade 9, one of the science teachers showed, instead of showing Jurassic Park because of the DNA, they showed Species.
No.
Like, he showed it in class.
No. He got fired.
100%. That was the last thing he did at the school.
He wanted to get fired.
I think that was his swan song. He's like, guess what I'm going to do to go out.
He imploded. What was the reaction of this ninth grade class?
So I wasn't in the class. I had heard like stories of it, but it was definitely like what happened was he showed them, and you can't fit a whole movie into a class. So you do this 2-day thing. So he showed them day one, and then the school was abuzz about like, he showed them the naked, alien sex movie that happened. And then word got to the principal. And then the next day, the principal went to the class. And there it was, the second part.
Wow. Yep, that teacher wanted to be gone. He got. You do that on purpose.
Yeah, 100%.
That's amazing. Oh, my gosh. Do you want to hear my first memories of Desperado?
I do, more than anything.
I went, I saw my dad every other weekend. So I was with him every other weekend. And so I was there to see him one weekend. That's my third weekend and a fourth weekend in a row. But we went to go see a movie. I think it was like Apollo 13 or Babe or one of those films. But one of our friends, family friends, Alfonso, went with us, but he went to Desperado. And so we watched the movie and I came out. I was pretty jazzed about what I had just watched. And he came out of Desperado and he had this like glazed look in his eyes. And he just looked at me and he goes, Mark, what a movie. And then he's like, you probably can't watch it, but oh man, he was kind of in a stunned. He was just really impressed with this movie. Like, Alfonso loved Desperado. So the next weekend I just went and watched it, but I just remember his look. He's like, oh my gosh, that was incredible. But I'll never forget that look. What was your experience with Desperado?
So my first experience was my mom and dad went to go see it. And before I went. And again, this was a time where like some movies had trailers, but not all of them. Like, and they didn't all get TV spots. So I remember being aware Desperado was coming out, seeing the poster where he had his forehead against the shotgun.
Oh, what a poster. Right? Yeah.
What a poster. So seeing that and just like the word Desperado, and again, maybe a couple 30-second TV spots, but not – there wasn't this hype, like world we live in now where there's like spoiler alerts and like the trailers give away. Like it was a different time where you go to a movie and still be surprised what was happening in the movie. And mm-hmm. my dad is a huge Western fan, and I think he thought he was going to see like a Clint Eastwood cowboy movie. Is what I think he was walking into.
Silverado, Desperado, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, something Bravo. Like that.
Real Dorado.
all those autos.
Hugo, wait. No.
And so he took my mom to go see it, and he came home, and I was like, how was the movie, Dad? And he was like, it was awful, son. It was just, he hated it. Because it's definitely not a spaghetti Western, right? Like, that's not what it is. But it's ironically like Rodriguez's Fistful of Dollars. Like he was really trying to make an homage to the, you know, the man with no name.
It's a Western.
It's, but not on the surface. And so my dad, it just wasn't what he was expecting. And he's like, I remember him being so upset with it, and he went on a Wednesday because Wednesday was like the night he took my mom to go see it. But I was going with my friends to the movies on Friday, and we hadn't decided what we were going to go see yet. And so they're like, what are we going to go see? I'm like, well, my dad said Desperado wasn't great, but our theater only had two screens. So it was either Desperado, or it was only actually one screen, but it was an early show and a late show. So it was either Desperado or I think it was maybe his first night or something else. And they were like, oh, we all agree. Let's go see Desperado. And for a guy who bought his first guitar 6 months prior, that movie was the perfect movie for me right at that point in time. Like, it's just this nonstop action. And I had no idea about El Mariachi. Like that wasn't until years later when you're like, wait, this is a sequel to something? And so one of my favorite things, and I think that's why I love movies like Waterworld, movies like Mad Max, is when there's just this assumed history that nobody explains to you. And so there's this mysterious history behind the events of Desperado. Like Desperado is a reaction to a story we never saw. And so I loved that. And so I just came out of it just being this like tour de force of like, it was just, he was shooting everything. And there was such great character moments and like good characterizations from actors in that movie that you get lost in the world of Desperado.
Yeah. And I hadn't watched Hard Boiled yet. So I wasn't familiar with that kind of gunplay coming out of Hong Kong at the time.
Right. Right.
So, you know, in the commentary, I love every Rodriguez commentary is absolutely beautiful. I just love listening to him talk. He made this movie for $7 million. He could have had more. He's like, I don't want it. So he just goes down, right, shoots in Mexico. He said on the commentary, he goes, if you were on my crew and you only did one job, you were dead weight and you were gone. So he only had two real stunt people on this movie. He only had, if you know, the guy who gets shot when he's with Quentin Tarantino, he's five different guys getting shot in this movie. So he just reused sets and he shot it on a budget. He shot tons of footage. And so watching this movie, not only did it take me to like a different place, but it was kind of interesting. I'm like, there's Tarantino. I'm like, there's Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
And I knew about Banderas. I knew about him vaguely. I'm watching this movie and his flicking of the guns, when he flicks the gun behind his back, the opening stylistic sequence, which is hilarious. You know, he was the tallest Mexican I've ever seen, and he's just blowing people away. And just the way that he, you know, Robert Rodriguez did that on purpose, because El Mariachi is a comedy of, you know, there's a lot of funny moments, but people didn't get it. So in this one, he let people know this movie is going to be wild. And so me in 95, because if you think about the action films, Heat and that kind of like Die Hard with a Vengeance, Bad Boys, even there wasn't the gun flicking. There wasn't, I hadn't seen Hard Boiled. So I knew nothing about balletic gun motions. So watching Antonio Banderas just like strut on screen and just shoot people behind his back, and watching rocket launchers and guitar cases and stylistic gunplay, it blew my mind. This was the first movie I'd seen like that.
Yeah. And Banderas said that, I think it's on the Once Upon a Time in Mexico commentary, but he talks about his decisions in Desperado and carry them over to that movie. is that he wanted the El Mariachi, the character, to really be like a flamenco dancer or a mariachi, even when he's shooting his gun. So everything is almost like a dance move, right? So he wanted to do the same flair that you would do, you know, in a mariachi band, all the moves. He wanted to treat his guitar, his guns the same way. There was no static stances. It was all like, it was all flow. Like he was just flowing the whole time. And man, oh man, did it ever work. I also want to say about that opening scene, I think Steve Buscemi should get an Oscar for his telling of that story. He goes into the story and then out, and can I get a clean glass? This one's dirty. What was his name?
My cleanest glass.
And even the way he like with his fingers wipes the hair from the middle of his face, it's so awkward and unsettling. Watch him do it all. It's perfect.
It is. It's, and then I also love how Chungo, how it sounds when it gets poured out of the tap. Yeah.
Oh, the sound director in this movie, which was probably Rodriguez as well. Yep. It's perfect. It's perfect.
It's just sludge being poured out. And then, you know, there's Chungo shirts. It's like the best warm beer in, Oh, it makes me so happy. But yeah, I love what you said though. It is, it's like a ballet. It's like you said, like a mariachi, just the way he flicks them and the score. And it was interesting too what Robert Rodriguez said on the commentary, that he wanted this movie to be a bunch of different short stories. And if you think about it, when you think about this movie, I don't think of it, sometimes I have a hard time thinking of it as a whole. I just think about the Danny Trejo sequence. I think about the rocket launcher guitar case sequence. I think about the bar shootout. I think about the scene where Salma Hayek's playing guitar and he's moving his guns. There's all these little moments that make it up. It's really interesting. And all the music is different in each different one too. So he just wanted to make a series of short films. And I think that's why it's so watchable, because it just moves so fast. And it's just
Even like you're saying, that opening sequence where he establishes, you know, is the biggest Mexican ever. Like that, even like the bar looks different than the bar when Banderas walks into it, right? It's a different set almost. And so, yeah, it's very much these compartmentalized little moments that he puts together.
And I love that about it. And I think that's what makes it so rewatchable, because this is going to sound really weird, but like, I know True Lies has a ton of we covered it on the podcast. I think it's a beautiful movie, but I don't want to watch it, because I just feel like the whole narrative and it's the weirdest thing for me to say. I don't know. And even Speed, you get the elevator, then you get the bus, then you get the train. It's all great, but I would rather watch Desperado. I would rather watch this. I'm not saying it's a better movie, so don't, you know, you probably just drove your car off a bridge and you're screaming at me. But just know that when I say that, like, you know, Twister I love, but you get that love story in the center and it's fine, it's great. But there's just what Desperado does is these little vignettes and the way that he breaks it down, the action, and it's all just so it's so good. And you know what's interesting? The studio didn't want Salma Hayek. They wanted a blonde actress. And Robert Rodriguez was like, "Are you kidding me?" he's like, Are you serious? Is this?" And so he had to fight to get Salma Hayek. And she's perfection in this movie. Her performance is wonderful. So it's just, I don't know. Just, I think he planned out everything. And he only had, you know, they shot this movie in 7 weeks. That's like, that's how long Cameron takes to shoot, I don't know, a car chase. No, Cameron works fast.
Right.
But this is a miracle of a movie, man. I really think so. And when I mean miracle, I just mean industriousness, creativity, performances. You know, just A-list actors nowadays crushing it.
Yeah, so it's interesting. In my formative high school years, my two go-to movies, and I think I've discussed these as well, were Desperado and Roadhouse. Those are my two go-tos. And this is like a little quiz for you. Can you tell me the crossover actor?
The crossover actor. So there's Steve Buscemi. He's not in it. There's a crossover actor. I'm not trying to cheat, so I'm trying to think here.
No, you're not. I would just assume you would never cheat.
But this doesn't make for good podcasting when I don't say anything. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you. Who is it?
So it's Tito Larivia. So he was the other bartender. So there's Cheech Martin and the other guy. And he was in he was the front man of the band in the opening scene of Roadhouse.
Oh, man.
Playing guitar, singing.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And he's also bringing the facts today.
The zombie guitar player in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, with the flesh guitars?
Yeah.
Did you ever play a human guitar when you were playing music?
You know what? I've had a chance to buy a couple, and I just didn't find the right one. I'm not opposed to it, but I just got to find the right one to pull off with something that bold.
Can I ask you a question? How do you tune a flesh guitar?
You tune up the hamstrings.
You work the quads. Oh, this is what I want to say. Joaquin de Almeida, he came in last minute for Raul Julia because Raul Julia passed away. Raul Julia was supposed to be in this movie. And
right.
I knew him from Clear and Present Danger. Because that was a movie, man, that I loved. The scene where they're like, go, 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 go. So seeing him in this and just, like, I know him. Like, this is amazing. Oh, man. Yeah, sorry. But you just dropped a great fact on us. And then I just dropped Walking. But Clear and Present Danger is legit, man. Oh, my gosh.
Clear and Present Danger, that's a great pull. That's a great pull.
But you know why I love – what I love about this movie is – and I spent years of my life on film sets. And I've spent years of my life writing and researching movies. And you can tell – over my time, just watching a movie or after, you know, I knew about it beforehand, but just watching it now for this episode, you can just tell the love that was put into it, the experimental nature of it. Like one of my, we're going to talk about this later there's so many cool moments that get talked about. We decided to do our favorite 11 through 15th cool moments, but there's a scene where Bucho, he throws a piece of paper into a henchman's mouth, like a dead henchman's mouth. But the way it's looking at him, it's like a comic book shot. And the reason that Robert Rodriguez did that is because it was a different bar and it wasn't as clean and all the bodies had to get moved. So it didn't match anything of what they had done. So he just found angles to make it look cool and different. So he didn't have to show the bar. Yeah. But just that shot and the comic book angle, it was just such a cool shot. And I just love how Rodriguez, he knew he didn't have much money. He knew, you know, he was shooting on film. He couldn't get a lot of actors to come down. But he just made it work. And I would love to work for him because what I experienced, man, I don't want to say who they are, whatever, but there's only a few leaders that I saw on film sets. Really, there are a couple leaders.
Yeah.
I think he's a leader because he does everything. And if you're next to him, he's going to be in there with you. He's going to be earliest there, latest there. So I just really like that about him, man. And
I think this was the era of like our holy trinity of independent film guys, which is Rodriguez, Smith, and Tarantino. And they all kind of were this, like, this workhorse. I'm going to direct, I'm going to be in my movies, I'm going to write it, I'm going to kind of like burn the candle at both ends. And almost when they went away from that formula, their movies lost a little bit of their heart. And you can see them always going back to, like, no, this is how I function well. Is to run a movie almost on a less of a budget, and you know, I'm gonna bring my friend. I'm not gonna do the studio suggests casting. I'm gonna bring my friends in here. I'm gonna bring the guys that I can trust working with that get what I'm doing, and that's when you get the gold moments from these guys.
Remember back in '02 when you were broke, and you hit that 45 minute guitar solo on that corner street. I don't think anybody will ever witness that again. But that kind of came out of hunger, right? You wanted to make a name for yourself. And it was just,
I said, this is my moment. I need to eat.
It was primal. Do you think you could recreate that?
You know what? I've tried several times to recreate it. I've gone back to the same street corner. I've used the same guitar.
Near the bread store.
I go next to the bread store, across from the place where the guy makes the steel hoofs. and then I just go for it. And there's the magic isn't there.
Yeah, do you think that happens? I think when you're hungry, like when you hustle, that's there. And you're younger too.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that I did back in the day trying to get into the industry, I wouldn't do now. So it's
– yeah.
And I do think you get this – I also think you don't know any better yet. You don't know.
The bliss of an experience, right?
Exactly. And I think that's – they just didn't know. They were on home turf. They had control. They had great scripts and they just did it. And yeah. And also too, though, that was such a random era that when something pops that big, like nothing gold can stay. So it's hard to keep that edge. I think Tarantino's done it because he's jumped. So his dialogue has remained the same, but he has
yeah.
mixed up his movies. And I, you know, Robert Rodriguez, I'm a fan of Alita. And what I like most about Robert Rodriguez is he just does things in Texas. Like, he doesn't care. Like, he built the Alita set in Austin, Texas. He's just like, I'm shooting yeah. in Texas. I think
Rodriguez's, I think his watershed moment was Sin City, right?
Oh yeah. That was mainstream. Where he's like, huge.
But mainstream, but to the point where he's like, he lost his like Directors Guild credibility because he's like, no, I'm giving half the credit to Frank Miller.
Yep.
And I think that was his moment that was going to make a huge mainstream studio film or like a huge mainstream film. But he's like, I'm still going to do it my way. And I'm going to, it's going to cost me something, right? True art, I think, costs people stuff.
I agree. And it costs them for sure. But look at how much it influenced, though, right? He just.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 300 comes afterwards. But I don't know. But his movies, you know, it's interesting. In his career, he's found ways to be successful. I mean, like his Sharkboy movie, his Sharkboy movie made 70. His 2011 Spy Kids movie, $80 million. Spy Kids 2, $119 million. Spy Kids 3D, $167 million. Spy Kids, $197. So he...
And I'll say this. Although you just said Spy Kids for you made $197, you forgot the million, and it's hilarious that you said that. But my kids growing up, like, loved those movies. They loved the Sharkboy, Lava Girl, and all the Spy Kids movies. It was fantastic. So we used to have Rodriguez nights where the kids would watch Spy Kids, go to bed, and I'd watch Once Upon a Time in Mexico or, you know, a Rodriguez film, Sin City or something.
Oh, man. Do you like The Faculty?
I love The Faculty.
You know what's interesting? I love that movie, but it doesn't feel like a Rodriguez movie. But I also think that was important for Rodriguez to prove that he doesn't just make Rodriguez movies, if that makes sense. So he could be part of the system. But I still dug it. That's a good flick, man. And once again, just hearing him talk about his movies and I like your Rodriguez nights, man. That makes me happy. Have they done Alita yet, or is that still a little out there?
Oh no, they love Alita. They're very sad because they don't know if a sequel's coming. They're like, there needs to be a sequel to this because it ends so much of like, oh, what's gonna happen next, right?
Mm-hmm. Ed Norton just standing there going, nah.
Now, did you ever watch any Lucha Underground?
I did not. But was it good?
You need to watch it. It's incredible.
Is it still going on? Like,
no, it was I think 3 seasons, maybe 16 episodes. It ran for 2 years. But it was like this pro wrestling show where they had legit pro wrestling, but then they had like Dusk Till Dawn, like all the storylines were shot and directed by Rodriguez. And so it was like they wouldn't be like backstage talking like wrestlers normally do. It would cut into like this Rodriguez movie with wrestling in it. It's incredible.
That's why I love him, man. Dude just wants to do his own thing, and he wants to make new things, and he wants to kind of open up what, like, he wants to be more inclusive and diverse. Like, he just wants to make cool stuff, and I love that about him. And I think maybe, I don't want to say hurt him, but I'm not going to say hurt him.
No.
But it definitely took him in another trajectory, I would say.
Right.
But no, like, I mean, I wish
I think it's his trajectory, and again, Alita was something different, and it was kind of like a bigger affair, but it's still ripe with him. You know what I mean? It's still clearly Rodriguez. There's clearly Rodriguez moments in it.
Oh yeah, for sure. A lot of good bar fights.
Yeah.
He loves a good bar fight. And I also remember in college we had a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We had a Once Upon a Time in Mexico banner in our college house. So nice. It was like a big event, and Johnny Depp was in it. That was in his Pirates of the Caribbean pomp.
Oh, yeah.
That was a legit movie. How much did it make? Let's see.
Once Upon a Time?
Oh, it only made $97 million worldwide. That's weird. But
how much did it cost, though?
I don't see a budget. I can look it up. But I do like that he's a director, screenwriter, producer, production designer, editor, composer, cinematographer, re-recording mixer, and sound effects editor.
Yeah. I'm surprised he's not starring in it. Like, he's done everything else.
Hey, so how about this? Let's take a quick break, then we'll come back. We will talk more Desperado, and we'll just talk about the movie, actually, and our favorite cool parts that aren't the coolest parts. How's that sound?
Beautiful.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks, and joining me is the tallest Canadian I have ever seen.
Lay it on pretty thick.
What a great story.
It's frustrating when I'm hanging out with Phil, who's also on Movies and Films and Flicks quite a bit, is because I'm the tallest Canadian people have ever seen, but the lights dim for Phil. And so, like, if we combined our efforts, we could be a desperado, but it's we should have half of the pie.
I found it. I love my having you and Phil on the show. Like, you guys, that's what I love about MFF, man. I got the most interesting group of guests, and it always makes me happy. There's always something always different that I can look forward to, and I love it.
So Phil and I often refer to you as our Rodriguez, and I say I'm Banderas, and he's Trejo. We're always there. We're like a crew.
Dude, I love it, man. That's a sweet crew right there. And right? Let's talk about Trejo in this movie and throwing knives, because...
Now, was this Trejo's first movie?
So he had done extra work before. So he came out of L.A. when he did this movie. So he didn't just find him, you know, on the streets. Like, he came down, right. He found him from L.A.
But he was doing, like, stunt choreography and fight choreography, right?
Yeah. Let me look him up, because he said that he was already acting in L.A. when he got him. But let me look him up. I mean, he just had the best look, though, about him. And just Megan watched a scene, and she's like, man, look at Trejo all svelte. Scene, though, man, where I do think it's pretty interesting that the driver of that limo didn't just smush him when he goes in front of it, but whatever. But it's such like an iconic scene, because I just had never seen throwing knives. I'd probably seen throwing stars, but watching these throwing knives and watching how he just killed Buscemi. And then it was interesting too with Banderas, because he takes three to the body, and they really – like, Banderas sells the pain. Like, he shows how hurt he is. So I was going to say
early on, like, this was in that 94 era where we're moving away from Stallone and Schwarzenegger, and we're going more the route of Bruce Willis and Keanu Reeves, right? Like, Die Hard and Speed are kind of changing what we think an elite action star looks like. Mm-hmm. It's kind of changing the conversation. And Banderas kind of falls somewhere in the middle there. But I would say that his character is in a world that he's surviving in, but not thriving in. Like, he's not this unstoppable guy. He gets legitimately hurt almost every time he goes out.
And he would have been killed by Trejo easily.
Easily.
So Trejo had been acting since 83. That was his first extra role. Yeah. So he did 80, and he's all a bunch of extra roles here. But, yeah, I love that he's not perfect. And Banderas gets shot, and you get the chunky bullet-pulling scene with Salma Hayek pulling that out of his arm.
When she yells hot water, and he spits it out and goes, "Are you trying to kill me?" I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
I think you're right that he fits in right between this, because he's super sane. He's also not built like a brick. And I really like that about him. Like, he still has some sensitivity to him, and his scenes with Salma Hayek, it was just nice not watching an emotionless man on screen. And that's what I like about Keanu in Speed. He just seems like a nice dude. And those are the action heroes I like most. And I think that's another thing I loved about this, was just watching Banderas just own the screen. It was awesome.
Everything he did from his the musical number at the credits.
Oh, when he goes under the disco ball.
When he goes under the disco ball, when he smacks that guy with his guitar, there's that great blood spray that comes out. And he doesn't miss a beat. I'm like, that's like right there. That's when you're like, well, what are we watching right now? This is incredible.
Oh, it's so good. And, you know, I love him with the other mariachis. So you had, you had the original mariachi with him.
Yep.
But then you also had what I love is the one that wasn't in the movie beforehand. Was it not Campa? I think what was the other one's name?
Kino. Campa and Kino.
He was an accountant. And Robert Rodriguez couldn't get actors to come down to Mexico. He's like, well, he's a good-looking kid. He wants to act. So he put him in the movie.
Right. And that's how legends are born.
But they were cool, man. Like, just so cool. And watching Banderas, like, when he let's play. And he does the neck snap and then just – and there's a scene where everyone runs out of bullets and he just snaps a dude's neck. What a great scene. And I also love the names of the characters in this movie. You get Buscemi, right hand, pickup guy.
Yeah, the pickup guy.
that makes me so happy. But yeah, no, sorry to hijack what you're saying, but yeah, he absolutely does fit that middle ground where he's still the traditional murder everybody action hero, but he's not the best at it, which is really nice.
He also gets sympathy along the way. Like, it's hard for Schwarzenegger to get sympathy because he's always the biggest guy in the movie, right? like Schwarzenegger wanted to play RoboCop, and they say, well, by that time you put a suit on this guy, he's going to tower over everything, and then there's no drama there because he's just so big. And so with Banderas, you get a guy that, you know, he gets shot, he goes down, and you're like, whoa, he's not the biggest dog in the fight.
That's wonderful. You remember Fast and Furious 4 when Vin Diesel gets shot and he just looks at it and goes, oh, I'll be all right. In this one, yeah. When Banderas takes – when he takes knife shots to the arm, they look like they're going to kill him. And that arm, when he's getting dug into, he's hurt. And I like that he sells the pain. You're right. Yeah.
And the scene where he's walking down, the blood trails against the wall.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, the guy's a hurting unit right now. He needs help.
That's the best part, though, man, isn't it? Just watching that. I think it sells the action. I think it makes it so much better.
Yeah.
I'm not into those kind of unstoppable killing machine movies. So I love – I mean, The Raid is probably, like, my favorite action movie ever made. But I do like those guys that get knocked down and just, like, you know, you watch what like, Martin Riggs in the first Lethal Weapon and Danny Glover. Like, I love that they take some pain. I dig that about them.
I was listening to a Bruce Pritchard podcast. He does the pro wrestling stuff. And when he used to get tapes of, like, back in the 80s and early 90s, if you were a wrestler in the indie scenes, you'd send VHS tapes in to, like, the big companies to say, here's my work, take a look at me. And Bruce said the guys would send in, like, highlight reels of them doing big moves and looking impressive. And I was like, I want to see them lose. I want to see them how they can sell pain. I want to see them get hurt. I want to see them take big moves. That's what I want to see, because that's where the story is. Anybody can win a match. I want to see this guy convincingly lose one.
When you get slapped in the chest, I want to see that pain. You know,
exactly.
When you get a lower back strike. Oh, right? Okay. Have you seen Four Brothers?
Yeah, it's great.
There's a scene where Mark Wahlberg punches Chiwetel Ejiofor, and he sells that back punch like nothing I've ever seen in my life before. He goes, whoa! It's the greatest thing I've ever seen, because – listen, man, doesn't matter the size of the person. If they punch you in the back and you're not really paying attention, it's going to hurt. You're going to react like that.
You know, I think the best sell in a movie is, remember in Hard Target when that guy gets his ear cut off?
Oh, yeah.
And then the next scene, he puts the phone to his ear and he's like, ah, and he winces when he hits it. That to me conveyed the most pain, that I winced with him. Because I was like, don't answer the phone that way. But it was akin to, like, when you bite your lip and then it's swollen, so you bite it more because you forget that it's swollen.
Oh, man. And that's such good acting, because he didn't seem to anticipate it, because that's a gag.
Right.
That's a good actor right there.
Absolutely. So, again, selling the little pain, selling the big pain, selling the pain mid-fight, that's fantastic stuff.
So I just wanted to go off on a random tangent. I was watching Letterkenny the other day, and there's a wedding episode. And there was three big city guys. And they... when the first two would talk, I would always watch the third one, and he would just wait to say his line. He wasn't listening, and it always annoyed me. I just want to tell you that. Yeah. So it's always, I love it when they don't anticipate.
Right.
Like an ear strike. I mean, if you're a stuntman, you probably got to move a certain way. You don't want to get plugged right in the face. But I just want to throw that out there. And Letterkenny's beautiful, by the way. Just, you know, getting out there. I'm not shading Letterkenny. But I think Letterkenny's so good, you notice. When something's really good, you notice the flaws. Like,
yes,
the worst thing that's ever happened to you in your life.
Yeah. Well, the thing about, and then we'll stop talking about obscure Canadian comedies. But the thing about Letterkenny is that when it's hot, it's red hot. And because of that, when something misses, you can really tell it misses big.
Yeah. The Dick episode.
Yeah.
I almost turned that episode off.
Right. Because you're like, what? This isn't what I wanted to watch.
Like, they committed to it, which I respected. I mean, you and I are big. You know what I noticed too? Letterkenny, it's all about bits, and you and I work so many bits. Like, we were wrestlers.
Well, it's almost like a sketch comedy where it's like, okay, we're gonna do this. Here comes the produce stand bit. Then here comes like the youth pastor bit, and here comes like the goth kids bit. And it's almost like they're different sketches in a sketch comedy show.
Yeah. And the familiarity, right? The sketches that you get. Because you know what, though? SNL has the same characters coming back. So you get that familiarity.
Exactly.
That's why I bring you on this thing, A+. So, hey, you want to talk about our favorite 11 through 15 coolest moments in Desperado?
Absolutely, I do.
And this is a weird idea, but everyone talks about the cool moments. Let's talk about 11 through 15.
Okay, do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I guess I'll drop one. There's a scene where I love where Kino, he hides. Oh wait, after he blows up something, and after Kampa shoots a bunch of things, he just leans on his guitar case and just looks very satisfied while being surrounded by probably a dozen men shooting machine guns at him. But he just looks so relaxed, and he looks so pleased with himself. And it's just, it's totally, and I also love when they're shooting at him, he hides behind his guitar case, like he squats on the ground. It's just good. I think great action films are the ones that feature excellent background performances or secondary performances. Like The Rock, Bokeem Woodbine makes a meal out of his major scene in that movie. When you have such a deep bench, so that's I had to bring up deep. Like, it has such a deep bench. I just love that scene. It's such a cool moment.
Beautiful. One of my number 11 is, does anybody know the number to the phone in my car? Because you have like the big bad where like the country of Mexico is scared to say this guy's name. And he's trying to kill this one guy who is like a ghost that he doesn't know what's going on. And he has this very expensive car he's bought because he's rich and he wants to be the rich bad guy and have everything. But nobody knows how to use the phone, get a hold of the phone in his car. And it's just this perfect, like, moment of frustration.
And I love that shrug. Just has no idea. He just kind of...
Yeah.
No one knows. Oh, it's beautiful. What a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I was Bucho, I would be infuriated. Because it's not my job to know that number. Right hand should have given him that number.
Absolutely.
So he's justifiably angry. I like that. All right. Okay. So
In that moment, I was going to say it's in that moment of like, I'm about to leave the house and I can't find my keys. Well, like where could like, it's like this. I need it now. And he just wants to know the number to the phone in his car.
Oh, it's a beautiful moment. And no one knows it. It's so cheeky, man. I don't think people knew that they could laugh at this movie. There's a lot of great comedic bits in it that I adore. So I'm
going to go for it. Paul Verhoeven, when he made RoboCop, said, if people understand they can laugh at this movie at the jokes, it'll succeed. If they don't get that it's dark comedy, it's not gonna make it. And I think this movie's kind of the same thing. Like, you have to know that it's okay to laugh at these things.
It's like Showgirls too. He made that as a comedy over the top, and everyone took it seriously. So I guess that's his fault. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you just got to understand it, get on its way. Like, if you're thinking you're going to watch Silverado, you just got to kind of tamper your expectations, I think. But beautiful. I guess, okay, so my number 12 is, I love when the guys crash their cars when Salma Hayek's just walking across the street. Because it's not it's not that crazy of an accident. It's not, like, there's no, like, whooping and hollering. It's just a funny random moment where two cars smash into each other. And it's never mentioned again. It's just such a – Robert Rodriguez just said, I wanted to have that scene just to show the – like, just to really give Salma the best entrance possible. So he wanted to make her pop because he just loved her as an actress. So I just love that the two cars just smash into each other. And it's not overly comedic, but it gets the point across. And I just love that thing. So I'm going to say number 12 because he just wanted to really make her pop. So that's my number 12.
All right, my number 12 is and the only reason it's for 12, maybe it would rank higher in my own personal rankings, but as far as cool moments in this movie, it's this real heartfelt moment where Antonio Banderas is teaching that kid how to play guitar. And he's like, don't worry about this hand, like this. And practice, and tomorrow I'll teach you a tune using what you have learned. And he plays that little ditty. You know my friend Brad Acker, who I went to high school with, and we had guitar class together. And whenever we would learn something new, we'd look at each other and race each other to say, like, I'll teach you tomorrow a tune using what you have learned. But it was this, like, really cool little moment between Banderas and this kid. In the middle of this movie where everyone's just shooting at everybody, there's this kind of, like, little heart moment. And then my friend and I made a bit out of it. So that's my number 12 moment.
I love it. The scales that he's playing.
Yeah.
You know, you got to learn the basics, man. You got to build that foundation. Everyone wants to be
your muscle memory
rocking your 45-minute guitar solo first. They didn't take the years to learn.
Right. They gotta get those years learning if they want to play on the soundtrack to Star Sharks in Sweden.
Oh man, that guitar lick. You held the chord for the. That's a Guinness World Record still, is it not?
It hasn't. There's rumors that a guy in Germany beat it nobody can verify it. So it's like, is it still officially? But I think we're going to have like some verification on the German guy.
Well, I think he cheated because his hand cramped so bad that it turned into a claw and he was able to hold that for that long.
Yeah, I suspect he was using an Ebo as well, which is, it's just not fair.
And you went and just ate some burgers afterwards and you were fine. And then you went and played some piano.
Yeah, I went and got a mountain burger, called it a day.
My 13th favorite moment, it's quite bloody, but I do love when our friend from Roadhouse is chasing down El Mariachi, Antonio Banderas, and he tries to shoot at Salma Hayek's character, but then when he gets him on the ground, so El Mariachi flicks the script, he gets shot in the arm, but then he puts the two guns up to the guy's head and then shoots him, and then blood just sprays into his face. That's such, I don't know if they showed that in the trailer, but I think it's a great way to show that you blew somebody's head off without showing how you blew their head off. It's such a good indie gag, and I love it. Just splats him with blood. Glorious.
Yeah, no, I think he did that well with like, he not just afraid to showing on-screen violence, but he would do some stuff where it would be like, what you don't see is worse than what you actually do see.
Mm-hmm. Like, that, you know, that guy's head is spaghetti right now.
And I think a lot of that comes down to budget, like learning how to do it without a huge budget, kind of like with Jaws. You know, we can't show the shark, but we can show these yellow barrels. And then your mind actually makes the shark look scarier than the shark would have looked as it was. So, yeah, I'm with you all the way on that one.
You're bringing the heat tonight, my friend.
All right, so my number...
You're walking away from explosions tonight. That's what you are. And there's two of those moments in this.
Yeah, so it's not even that. It's in the... excuse me, but I used to work in a bar, so I know what it's like to wait on people and to bring them drinks that they order and all that. And I just want to bring it to your attention that the service here needs immediate improvement. And then that whole back and forth is so great.
Like, you're still here?
It's so perfect. Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. I love.
She's just going on.
What did they drink? Did they ever get served?
They order drinks. They never come. And she's like, what does she say? She says, the waiter, where is he? And don't tell me he's still in the bathroom.
Oh, man.
Our waiter took our orders, took a long time getting them, and then he never came back to see if he wanted anything else. We did. Nor did he give us a bill. We've been waiting for the bill so we can get the hell out of here. And then he was going to shoot her. He was going to shoot the girl.
Yeah, he shows him the thing. Hey, because they would get away with it. And he's like, nah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Guess whose sister that was?
I have no idea.
Robert Rodriguez.
Really? He put his little sister in there.
Yep. She was originally supposed to star in El Mariachi, but he couldn't afford to fly her down. So he just...
That's incredible.
Yeah, so he just gave her this role. And he's like, and of course El Mariachi blows up, but... Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that scene. Oh my gosh. Oh gosh. So I've done, how many have I done? I've done three. So I've already talked about but my 14 is when Bucho drops the piece of paper to the guy's mouth. Great shot. Good villain moment. Good comic book shot. It just makes me happy. It's a very stylistic moment and I like knowing how it happened. So that's my number 14. It's a cool moment. How are
that
you?
That is cool.
What's your 14?
So my 14, and I don't know if – I don't know. It's number 14. That's the one. It's the tension in the moment when they're holding the gun on Banderas and he opens the guitar case and it's just a guitar in there.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, it's a guitar. It's just a guitar. And then there's this like 10 seconds of you can see it opening up before they see it opening up.
No.
Yeah, no. And so I think that it's just a quick moment of tension, but I think it's played with the perfect tension.
Yeah, because you think it's just expertly played, man. You think he's going to get out of there, and then you just cut to one of the most beautiful gunfights of 1995.
Perfect. That gunfight could be, it could just be credits after that, and it's okay.
Oh, I love that scene. Yeah, because you think it's just such good tension building. Because you know what's in the guitar.
Yeah.
You think he's getting away with it. Then it opens slowly and you're like, oh, maybe you could close it. But no, he doesn't. And then everyone gets shot. All right. My 15 is the limo explosion. Because they wanted to flip the limo. But they couldn't because it was too heavy. So Bob Shelley, the guy who has done pretty much every practical effect on. He's blown up stuff in almost every movie you could ever imagine. They tried to blow up the limo twice and flip it, but it was just too big and heavy, and they couldn't do it. So I just wanted to. So they had a limo explosion, but they wanted to flip it. It was just too heavy, and they didn't have enough explosives because of the budget.
Why know? Why know why it was too heavy?
Why?
Because it was armor plated and had bulletproof glass.
Exactly. But I just love that.
If Bucho would have bought a regular limousine, then it would have been okay.
It would have gone.
He didn't. He had to go for the big one.
200 feet in the air, yeah. And landed on somebody.
Yeah.
All right. What's your 15th?
My last one.
Yeah.
My 15th moment is when he drives back and picks up his guitar case at the end and says, just in case.
It's a pun, and it makes sense.
It's a pun, and it makes sense. And you're just like, he's kind of gone, because in El Mariachi, if you're aware of the first movie, he was just that, just the mariachi who gets thrust into this crazy world.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of Desperado, he's kind of embraced being the gunslinger.
He likes it. He'll kill more people. They'll go to another town.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he'll keep getting shot.
They do go to another town.
Oh,
yeah. We know they do.
Mm. Oh, yeah, they do. Once upon a time in Mexico.
Yeah.
And also, too, I love when he jumps backwards off the building, but I figure that's an iconic moment, so I didn't want to put that in my 11 through 15.
Yeah, no. It was tough because I had to pick up my, 1 through 10 and then not use those ones.
It's very counterintuitive for a podcast, but that's us.
Yeah. Adam. Because, I couldn't use the hot water. I couldn't use that line. You know what I mean? Like you said, where she's playing guitar and he's, the guns are coming closer and closer and closer. Like that. And he kicks her over. Him kicking her over is fantastic.
It's a beautiful movie. And the double grenade, the gigantic grenade explosion that they're walking away from. Beautiful.
Yep.
I love this movie. And I'm really happy we talked about it, man. So I appreciate you going along with me on this folly.
Oh, I'll go along with you on any Rodriguez Banderas folly anywhere. I'm all in.
What are we doing next?
I think next we're doing Waterworld.
Oh, yep, Waterworld. I like it. Because you and I always prepare lists. I think one night you get we get really loaded with coffee or something, and we send each other 75 movies to talk about, and then we just pick another one.
I think we're doing that. I think we're doing Waterworld and then the Stone Cold Steve Austin prison fight movie.
Oh, yes. What's the name of that again?
I forget, but we'll find it. It's just the Stone Cold Steve Austin underground. It's Lionheart with Stone Cold.
Fighting movie. Let's see. And you said there's a good cast in this, too.
There's an interesting cast in it, for sure.
All right, we'll look that up. And what do you think about Edge's match at WrestleMania?
Edge is just one of those guys. So. I wish you wouldn't ask me it's not going to be a quick answer.
What do you think about Johnny Knoxville?
Johnny Knoxville was great. It's everything I wanted it to be. But I want to say this, and this goes back. I'm going to tie this into movie making and this episode. When Rodriguez made El Mariachi, when he made Desperado, he was learning how to do that. And there was something that was in that process, magic happened. We've kind of talked about that. And when you refine things right down to be the most efficient at it, sometimes the magic is gone. And I feel like Edge is so good at what he does that it's almost too slick sometimes. It's almost it's almost on paper too much of a perfect match to be actually a perfect match. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I get it. It's when an athlete is so good that you just sort of take it for granted.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I always like to equate, when I talk about movies, Jaws and the Wild Wild West, because when when Spielberg made Jaws, he didn't say I'm going to make a tentpole. I did, but Spielberg didn't say I'm going to make a tentpole summer blockbuster and change the genre of movies forever. He said I just want to tell a story about a shark, and it changed everything. But when they made Wild Wild West, they said, we're going to have action figures. We're going to have a radio song. We're going to have a big star. This movie is going to do this, have these actresses in it, and it's going to be a big summer blockbuster. And then the Wild Wild West happened because it was almost too much by the books.
Yeah. It was. It felt very homogenized, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the safest movies.
Yeah, it was real safe, and it didn't do what it was supposed to do. But all that to say is, if anybody here hasn't seen Desperado, go watch Desperado right now.
Watch it while listening to this episode. So yeah. Put it on.
So, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but your wife hadn't seen this movie prior to this conversation, had she?
She had not. She had not.
And did she watch it with you?
Well, she loves it.
Was she just blown away by how could this exist without me knowing about it?
Well, you know what's crazy? She loves Robert Rodriguez. So she's a big fan of his because I introduced her to his cooking schools and she knows about him from some of his later movies and she knows about him from the commentaries I've listened to with him, but she hadn't watched this. And so she just sat down and watched it and was like a huge fan. She dug it.
Yeah.
How could you not?
It's fantastic from beginning to end.
Beautiful movie. Well, I appreciate it. Hey, you want to promote Go Figure?
Yeah, sure. We have Go Figure on YouTube. It's one word. And we're an action figure restoration channel. So we take action figures and fix them up. And we have some episodes where we talk toys with other toy guys. But it's a lot of fun. We just released a Batmobile episode where I fixed up an old Batmobile and then pulled a little Fast and the Furious. And we actually raced an 84 Superpowers Batmobile against the 89 Toy Biz Batmobile. And we wanted to see which one was the best. So we had a little drag race. So, yeah, we have a lot of fun. So go check it out.
Gotta watch it. Go check it out. It's wonderful. And then listen, you've done episodes recently of Retro Blasting too, which is pretty cool.
I just did a episode with Retro Blasting and Analog Toys where we just discussed all things John Rambo. So if you're a Rambo fan, that's the episode for you.
Oh, amazing. Well, hey man, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark.
All right, so for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, for Adam Hodgins, this is Movie Stones of Flicks. We'll see you next week.